Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
BashaniRadio.com is global. You can listen on any computer or mobile device that connects to the internet. Simply go to BashaniRadio.com and click on the show you would like to hear. Then sit back and enjoy yourself with powerful and positive talk radio. BashaniRadio.com, New York City. Always talking about everything.
It's the 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival. Over 20 superstar artists on one stage. This is your 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival lineup. Presented by our marquee partner, Capital One. Coldplay. The Weeknd. DJ Khaled. Chris Stapleton. Lord, Kings of Leon, Big Sean, Pink, Miley Cyrus, 30 Seconds to Mars, Niall Horan, David Guetta, Thomas Rhett, Harry Styles, and special guest, Kesha. Our 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival. It's September 22nd and 23rd at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm your host, the one and only Vincent T. Edwards, better known as Mr. Speaker. Oh, it is such a pleasure to have back in the studio again, Pastor Derek McGee. Last time he shared some insight, powerful wisdom and knowledge on starting a ministry, what it's like to be a pastor. But today I have him back in the studio and we're going to talk about something that is very, very instrumental to any organization, to any household, to any church, and that is leadership. Pastor McGee, welcome back to Mr. Speaker Speaks.
Thank you very much, sir. Honor to be here once again.
Oh, it is truly a pleasure. Had a great time in the studio last time.
Yes, sir.
Like time just got away from us. But this whole concept of leadership, you hear this term all the time, leaders, leadership. I'm going to ask you, are leaders born? Ooh. Or can leadership be learned?
I actually would argue both. And here's why. Because John C. Maxwell defines leadership in one word, which is influence. I definitely believe that there are some natural born leaders who just have it in them. But I also think that people can definitely grow to become leaders just through their influence. And the challenge with leadership, though, is when you have influence, you can be leading people right or wrong. And I think that's very important to understand. And so it's key. And, I think even the individuals who are born or natural born leaders, some of them don't come into the knowledge of that until later. For example, myself, you know, I look back over my early schooling in middle school, high school, even in college, where I would always be propelled to the front and be leading people, influencing people. But I didn't define it as leadership. I just figured, you know, I was an encourager of other people, didn't see it that way. But the reality of it all is, as I've matured, I realize what it is. Now, the discouraging thing can become again is that people really believe in you, and sometimes they'll follow you anywhere and do anything. And that's where the danger can come in with your influence.
So what I'm hearing is almost two things. Can I be in a position of leadership and not be a leader, and be in a non-leadership position and be a leader based upon my level of influence?
And I would say yes. I mean, I think about it, as I mentioned in the previous broadcasting, I'm bivocational. So I work in the political process here in Tallahassee and in Florida. The firm I work for, I'm not the boss. I'm not the leader. However, there are individuals that I mentor. There's individuals that will follow my lead and are under my tutelage. And so I'm a leader, but I'm not the final say from an office standpoint. And so some people who are listening today who may not be the supervisor, may not be the big boss, but you're a leader in that team. You're on the leadership team, or you are someone who has influence over others. And from a pastorate standpoint, I would be naive to assume that I'm the only influential voice at the church where I pastor. There are people at our church who have a voice. May not be as resounding as mine, but they have a voice, and people are inspired by their voice, and you hope that that voice is complementing what you as a pastor are doing. But in truth, that's not always key. And that's why sometimes you see dissension and dysfunction and things happening under the umbrella of a business organization or a church, is because there are other individuals who feel they are leaders as well. And the danger is, so I teach a quarterly leadership class in my church for my leaders, and I'm teaching this year on man-made, man-appointed, and self-appointed leaders. And that's the danger you have in church and sometimes in business organizations is the right way of leadership is God-appointed leadership. But oftentimes you find man-appointed or self-appointed. Man-appointed is there are people who see things in you that are similar to them, and they want to catapult you to become their voice. Self-appointed is people who feel like, you know what, I can do better than anybody else. I'll make myself the leader. And all of a sudden they do that, and then dysfunction occurs. When God appoints you as leader and he puts you in leadership role, he's the same one also that equips you for what that is. So any trial or error that comes, he's already equipped you for it. But it's important for individuals, again, whether it's a secular setting or a church setting, to understand that once you identify yourself as a leader, you want to make sure that you are exemplifying the best leadership you can. And I believe this. I believe that every leader ought to have a leader. Like I believe every mentor ought to have a mentor, because it's hard for you to sow into somebody else when you're not being sold into. And so that's very important to me, that I'm making sure that I'm gleaning from somebody else's wisdom as I pass it on to someone else.
How important is trust and honesty with regard to leadership?
It's critical and very crucial. You know, it's when you think about trust and honesty, trust is one of those matters when you have it, individuals allow themselves to be vulnerable with you and towards you. And they also allow themselves to be able to divulge any information with you because they trust you. I'm a believer of adhering to strict confidentiality. And so if Mr. Speaker and I are in a conversation and you share something with me, I can assure you it will not be repeated again, because I take our conversations, unless you say otherwise, to be done in confidence. And so, you know, when you know me, you trust me that I'm always do that because my reputation says that. When you don't know me, over time, you'll come to the realization, you know what? That brother kept his word to me. And it comes that way. But here's the thing. Once you lose that trust, it is very hard, nearly impossible to get it back, because the torture and the fear of it happening again is so prevalent where people won't do it. And if you think about it from honesty, one of the things that I think is often missed is that critical matter of honesty, is being honest with people. And you can love a person and be honest with a person, but that honesty is so key and so important. As a leader, if you really want those under your leadership to grow and mature, it is important for you to make sure that you're always honest with them. Because here's a reality. The people that I submit myself up under by way of leaders and mentors of mine, I've empowered them to have a loud voice in my life. And because of that, they tell me sometimes, hey, man, you know what? Your stuff don't smell good. You out of order. And their statement doesn't change the fact that I may be pastoring people, but it lets me know, listen, man, you need to get yourself together. And that's an honest assessment of their evaluation of me. And anybody who say they're a leader and you're unwilling to receive constructive criticism from those that you deem as mentors or leaders above you, you're doing yourself a disservice, and most importantly, to those who are up under you.
So what do you say about the person that always says it's my way or the highway and surrounds themselves with people who constantly agree with them rather than provide constructive criticism, and they call themselves leaders?
I would challenge that is not leadership, that's dictatorship. Dictators always need to not only dominate the room and have the loudest voice, but also have everybody operate in fear toward them for repercussions. A real leader, I remember growing up this way. My grandfather would always say, if you have to tell me you're the man of the house, you're not the man of the house. Because the man of the house doesn't have to go around saying, this is my house. It's known in that house that you're the man of that household because of the way you carry yourself, because of your voice, because of your influence. And so no one in the house is challenging your position. They know it's already established. When you say it's my way or the highway, what you're basically saying is anyone who challenges me, then they're not going to be welcomed on the team, in the setting. And so you create a fear of people where they suppress truth from you because they're worried about the repercussions. And no one wants to be made an example out of. But the problem is the environment and the culture and organization that you're in leadership of, whether secular or the church, is you stunt the growth. And eventually death will come upon that place because if John C. Maxwell said, if you are the smartest person in your circle, it's a circle full of dummies. And I agree with that. If there's no one in your circle who can challenge you and challenge your way of thinking without you being intimidated or threatened by it, you're doing yourself a disservice. You want to be able to be challenged and be questioned in that regard. And any leader who's assured of him or herself, you're not threatened by being questioned. You're not threatened by someone having a misunderstanding of what you're doing. And you come in. Now, there are some people who will try to undertake you versus undergird you. You got to be careful of those individuals. But the Bible talks about shepherds and hirelings. And there are some hirelings who operate in a leadership role. Hirelings are individuals. When a shepherd had to go away from his flock of sheep, he would hire someone to come in and basically sit with them and watch out for them during that absence. Usually it wasn't a long absence, but during that absence. The problem with a hireling is a hireling only does the work because they're going to get paid for doing it. They have no heart for the people that or the sheep. They're getting paid. And so when a wolf came to wreak havoc in that flock, that hireling didn't fight off that wolf because the hireling only job was to get paid for doing this. The shepherd, however, would put himself in danger for the flock. And that's the difference between a leader and a hireling. And there are some people in secular world, in the church, who are hirelings that have been elevated to leadership positions. If we're not careful in church, sometimes we'll make you a leader by way of title because you give a good offering. Or you pay a good tithe, make you a leader, but your heart isn't shepherding. Your heart is a hireling. You're doing it for the credibility and the pay and not for the service or the shepherding.
Wow. You're listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks, and my guest today is Pastor Derek McGee, and we're talking about leadership. I often hear this term, on the field, on the court, he or she is a great leader, or in the office is a great leader. I really don't care about what they do off the court, off the field, or outside the pulpit, or in the church, but they are a great leader. What role does character play in leadership?
Yes, sir. I will say two things about character, and one of them many people have heard of, which is, you know, character is how you are when the lights are not on, the true essence of who you are. And I would say that to the church where I pastor, that if you ever want to know if I'm genuine, if my character is right, don't ask me. Look at my wife and my kids, because they're the ones who see me when the rest of you are gone. And if my wife is nodding off during a sermon, if my wife's not coming when I come to church, if my kids are doing everything but listening to me, you kind of know something. But when you don't, when you see the respect there, you know that my character is intact. Secondly, my belief of character is your character ought to speak for you and you can't speak for yourself. Case in point, if someone were to call Mr. Speaker and say something to you about a family member that you're very close with, your first defense is going to be to protect them because you know them a certain way. And so certain things that are said about them, you wouldn't receive because you know that's not the person you're talking about. you're defending their character because you know them that way. And so although they're not there physically to defend themselves, because you know their character, you will defend them based on how you know them. And the reality of it all is that oftentimes our characters are challenged and are questioned and are ridiculed by individuals who don't really know you. They may have had an encounter with you. But character is also something that we have compromised. And there are times when leaders will compromise their character for a paycheck, for an honorarium, for a title, for a position, for an invitation. But the reality of it all is if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And so character is so important. And it scares me when I'm around individuals who profess to be leaders, but they have no character. But the reality of you think about leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King, a man of great character. And you know, you black, white, any other race, you respected. You may not have liked the stance he took on several things, but you knew he was a man of character. You could think about many other individuals, even in a sports setting, you find individuals and oftentimes you can speak to character. Then you find some people who we elevate and put them in high hierarchy positions who have no character at all. They may be good at something, but they don't have any character, and they will sell you out to keep themselves in the limelight.
Wow. How, or in your opinion, do you think compromised character has affected the church? In a sense, now we know that the Lord said, upon this rock I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. It's not going to prevail. There are things that are done that can somewhat hinder or delay certain things in the move of God. Do you think compromised character from a leadership perspective has hurt or is hurting the church in this day and age?
I think both. I think it has hurt and it is hurting. I think both of them are the result of either, let's use it from a church context, either a pastor is desiring attention and self-made attention, or they want the limelight, and so they've compromised in that regard. Wow. Sometimes as pastors, you know, we have convinced ourselves that we warrant a certain attendance turnout each Sunday. We warrant certain invitations. We warrant certain articles written about ourselves. And so we will do anything, even hire individuals to go and promote our names. We'll compromise that. And the reality of it all is, and I always say this to the church I'm blessed to pastor and the friends that I have, is from the beginning of your walk with the Lord to the end of your walk with the Lord, as a preacher, I am a herald of the message, H-E-R-A-L-D. A herald's job is to only say to the people what the king has already said. If you read the book of Daniel, chapter number 3, about when it was said, the Nebuchadnezzar said, when the trumpet sounds, when you hear the trumpet sound, you bow down and worship. If you read that text closely, Nebuchadnezzar didn't say that. The herald said that. He said what Nebuchadnezzar said to him to say. And so a herald's job is only to say to the people what he's been instructed to say from the king. As a preacher, as a pastor, and as a preacher, my assignment is to be a herald of the message of Jesus Christ. So I'm only supposed to say to the people what the text tells me to say. Jesus Christ is the hero. The mistake we make, and it's how we compromise our character, is where we become the heroes of the message and not the herald of the message. And whenever you are preaching or teaching or simplifying a character where you're always the hero, that means that you sat down the Lord in your own life and you elevated yourself. And that's how compromise happens, when you convince yourself you're worthy of a seat at the table, and usually at the head of the table, and everybody else ought to be sitting around you, and you ought to be worshiped in that regard. And that happened to Lucifer in the book of Isaiah 14, 12 through 16. He got kicked out of heaven because the Bible said he said within himself, I shall ascend my throne to the heaven. And the Lord heard what he was thinking to himself, and he got kicked out of heaven. But think about this, though, Mr. Speaker. If you know the text closely, if you know anything about text around the text, a third of the angels follow Lucifer out of heaven.
That's a lot.
A third.
A third. That's quite a bit.
A third decided to follow him out of heaven versus staying with the Lord. So two-thirds stay, a third left. That's influence. That's influence. And that's what I mentioned earlier about
good influence. And bad
good
influence.
Good and bad. Is you had a third of the angels would follow Lucifer. When he got kicked out of heaven, they went with him versus staying. He was influential, and they found their identity under his leadership versus being under the Lord. And that's why you have pastors, you have CEOs, you can have presidents of organizations who may be the worst leaders, but they have influence. People will follow their leadership and compromise themselves. That's why you have bank CEOs and corporate CEOs who get caught up in scandals, and people knew, but they won't say anything because they're profiting as well in that regard.
Wow. Does a leader have a responsibility to develop others and other leaders?
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. The reality of it all is it's the push-pull effect, if I can do it that way. Push-pull is somebody is pushing you, which is usually going to be your mentor, and you ought to be pulling someone. And so it's a push-pull. I teach that in our leadership class as a church is if I'm pushing you as a leader to be better and to try to teach you how to be an effective leader, it'll be pulling someone. Because the pull is important because a mentor should also have a mentee. Who are you mentoring? To go further than that is we're all replaceable. Mm. At the church where I'm blessed to pastor, a Bible-based church, I require all of my ministry leaders. I call them servant leaders. I don't call them committee chairs. I don't call them anything other than you're a servant leader. The greatest leader was a servant leader. That's Jesus Christ. So they're all servant leaders. And I tell them when they all got designated over the ministry or over through prayer and consecration, they came to that leadership role with a major assignment from me. I want you to submit to me with a time certain of a person or persons in the church now that could be your successor. And they had to give it to me by a certain time. They had to give me the name and the why. Did that for two reasons. Number one is that I want to be able to start assessing the individuals from a distance. But number two is I was trying to train the current servant leaders that you are replaceable and you will be replaced. And so I wanted them to always know that you're not going to die in this seat. Somebody's going to replace you. And so my responsibility is to make sure that the vision that God has given never dies with under one person, but also to make sure that fruit can always be bore. And fruit can die on the branch if you're not out there pruning and plucking and cultivating. And that requires you understanding. And as a shepherd of God's sheep under his authority, my requirement is to make sure that I'm in tune with the people that I'm responsible for. And I use the shepherding mentality, Mr. Speaker, for pastoring as a father, but also use it in my professional life because that principle works across the way. It's a book that I read years ago called The Way of the Shepherd, a little small read, but it talks about a real shepherd. And it bases all in Psalm 23, and it breaks down that text. But the author also says that a real shepherd every single morning gets up, goes out, and he examines each of the sheep under his tutelage, each of them individually. He pulls up their coats of wool, examines to make sure there's no fleas or no bites, no insects. And here's what the book says. If one of the sheep in that fold gets an infection, if you don't doctor it immediately, that one infection can kill off many sheep because they're in close proximity. That shepherd has a responsibility to always be in tune to that sheep. Same thing in leadership. You have to be in tune with the people that you are responsible for. Make sure that you are pouring into them, spending time with them, sharing with them, investing in them, and then also challenging them to be imparting. Pay it forward.
Often hear this saying that people are inherently lazy. People want to be led, but very few want to lead. People shun responsibility. How do you go about acquiring true leaders? Here's what I'm saying. A lot of people want to say, oh, I want to do this. And they'll go strong and hard for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. How do you assess and get those people off the pews into leadership roles?
Single-handedly, probably my greatest frustration in leadership is what you just asked me. And I will add on to that by saying it's hard. It's frustrating also because especially when you want for people more than they want for themselves or you see within people more than they see in themselves.
My Lord.
And so I don't want to be on the radio selling false. I deal with the situation when you have some who have great ideas. They start out, you give them the blessing to proceed. They start out first 3 months, they're gung-ho, they're excited. And whether it's It's through their own procrastination, their own laziness, their own discouragement. Nothing comes out of it. Or you have where individuals, and this has become today's local church context, where we have this thing where I'm saved to sit, when actually you're saved to serve. So people are content with saying, this is my church, but you don't know they never do anything. They're just there. They come every Sunday. They're faithful to coming, but they won't volunteer. They won't participate. They're just there because their mindset is, I'm saved to sit. I'm not saved to serve. Jesus Christ was a servant. His 12 were servants. Even after his ascension in the book of Acts, when Peter and those guys continued on in their ministry, they were servants. We are called to be servants. When he says unto you on your day of accountability, he's not going to say pastor, preacher. He's not going to say anything. He's going to say servant. Mm-hmm. Because our responsibility is to be serving the present age, our calling to fulfill, not to be sitting amongst the chairs and amongst the pews. I'll say it to you this way. That chair doesn't need your help to be a chair. It does not. It's going to be a chair no matter what. And so whether you sit in there or you don't sit in, it's going to still be a chair. The old saints would say, rest on your feet, meaning get up, do something. But it's hard because it can be hard as well. But it's hard because for some individuals, they've been trained or they've trained themselves to where they want you to appease them and to move them and cater to them versus you getting them to understand that, no, it's time for you to help in the vineyard. Jesus said it. Harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. So the work is plentiful.
A lot of work.
We need help.
We need some help.
And if Jesus identified that, you know, we can't assume now that we're not going to see it the same way. But what's interesting is some of the same individuals, Mr. Speaker, who we identify with being lazy, especially in the church context, those same individuals are very busy and dutiful on their secular jobs. They don't give that same attitude and disposition to the place where they're getting the paycheck. So they'll give the church the crumbs. They'll give the workforce all the substance. And so it lets you know that they have it in them. They just make a choice that I'm not going to give it to you. I have some who will say, well, you know, Pastor, I will come to church regularly, but Sunday's my only day to get some sleep. So they'll give a job they hate 8, 9, 10 hours Monday through Friday. And then they'll say, you know what? I got to get my sleep. The only time I can sleep is on Sundays. And usually you're only in church maybe 2 hours. Okay, so you can get a lot of sleep before and after, but they're not going to call in work, take a day off to get that sleep. They go to work sick. They're going to take that Sunday off because to them, you're called to be the leader, not me. So that's you got to make the sacrifice. I don't. Don't inconvenience me. I know you got to drive 30, 40 minutes from your house to come to church, but that's your sacrifice. Inconvenience me. When I come in, let the air be on right, let the music be on right. Don't inconvenience me. But as a leader, you have to remember that everyone does not see it your way. And if you don't remind yourself that, regardless of it, I still have to. But within those 10 individuals, within those 10, there's always going to be that one. That if you can just get to them and you can cultivate them, that one will make it worth it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And I think about Jesus and his 12, and then he also had that inside. Peter, James, and John.
Right. Absolutely correct.
And the circle gets smaller, but the power of one is something else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can do a lot. And I just think about the whole concept of, you know, you may have a lot of people who are talented and can do a lot of things, but they're not dedicated, and you never know when they're going to show up.
Absolutely.
But that faithful
Absolutely.
Person you can work with and develop. And I believe those faithful people are the ones who understand and will become leaders. When you look at leadership in its totality, what would you say to my listening audience to be aware of as one of the downfalls or could be a pitfall for leaders?
A lack of discernment is a major one. I think another one is trying to mimic somebody else's original or trying to be a carbon copy of somebody else's original. Lack of discernment is, in the context of leadership, is you have a veiled or allowed into your private quarters individuals who shouldn't be there. And so now you've exposed them to all of the secrets. You've exposed them to all of the top secrets that you have. And you didn't discern that person actually was a wolf in sheep clothing. And so now you have basically given them the keys they need to basically undercut you and tear you down in that regard. And that's a very, very dangerous situation. You know, Mr. Speaker, it's, to me, it's the three P's. And this is how you ought to look at people, especially when you're a leader, the three P's. The pattern, the partners, and the pupils. The pattern, the partners, and the pupils. And I want to give credit where credit is due. This is not my origination. This comes from Pastor Arthur Jackson III out of Miami. He preached at a revival in Havana years ago, and he gave the three P's. And I've coined them for leadership for me. The pattern is that individual that you desire to exemplify. They're doing what you desire to be able to do, and they're doing it the right way. So that's a pattern. Getting to being your mentor, where they are doing what you want. The partners are those who are on your same level, individuals that can relate to what you're going to, but they're on your same level. So these people you may spend more time with in lunch and in conversations, and you guys iron sharpen iron. The pupils are the ones you're pouring into. They're your mentees. Maybe even be your flock if you are a pastor. They're the pupils. The danger we make in leadership is that a leader should never, ever allow personal matters to be given to pupils. They can't handle it because they see you at a certain level. And so they can't handle you being vulnerable a lot of times. The partners are the individuals that you usually will share a lot with, and you guys can encourage each other. That pattern, you may talk to that person once a month, once a year, but that one conversation enthuses you to the point where you can keep going. The mistake that leaders make oftentimes is that our pattern conversations we're starting to have now with pupils. And so the things you ought to be talking to your pattern about, or your people or your mentor about, you're talking about it with your mentees or your pupils. And so now you have elevated your pupils ahead of time. And so now they feel like they're on your level when they're not. And so they're not mature enough to handle that platform, but you put them there. And then when things start to crumble, now you guys there's dissension between you and them, and you're mad at them. And the fact that the reality is that you put them in that seat. And so it's the pattern, the partner, and the pupil. I would challenge every person listening to me, leaders, pastors, that you identify the individuals around you and make sure you put them in their right category. Because if not, what you end up doing is you can lose good friendships because you put them in the wrong category.
And exposing yourself.
Yes.
And leaders are exposed a lot.
Yes, absolutely.
It takes me back to my military days. I was in the Army. I went in. I was 11 Bravo. I was straight leg infantry soldier. And you have to run point sometimes. And point, you're out there.
Yes,
sir. You're on target. How can I become a better point man, a better leader?
Well, I think the first thing is your heart into it. You have to have a heart for leading, have a heart for influencing individuals in that regard. I think secondly, which is as important as number one, I believe, is that you have to really, really want the organization, whether it be the church, whether it be a secular, wherever you're leading in, you have to want it to grow and survive beyond you. And so your investment in it, your sacrifice toward it, is made easier when you desire for it to live on beyond you. I think about some of the great visions and great dreams and great goals that have died with the individual that we've never even seen come to pass because there was no desire to sacrifice. In the military, I wasn't in military, but in military, just some of my study, you know, it's no one's, you know what the common goal is. I a while back, Mr. Speaker, I was on YouTube watching videos of men and women coming back home from active duty. They were coming home either on an assignment, a leave assignment or whatever. And they were going to see a loved one, whether they're kids, their brother or sister. And you were seeing the emotional reunion. Could have just been a one weekend leave, but you saw their emotions of seeing each other. Sometimes they were coming back after 6, 9, 12 months away. It was the same reaction. Black, white, Hispanic, the same reaction was emotions and celebration. I made a statement to my wife when I watched a few videos. I said, I have a greater appreciation for those in the military because we don't realize the sacrifice that they make and their families make for them to serve for our freedom. But when these individuals sign up to go into the military, they're doing it for the greater good. They're submitting themselves for the greater cause. In addition to that, which I think is important too, is understanding that you don't have the right to bring embarrassment or destruction to the foundation or to the organization. No individual who gets into the military has the right to try to bring embarrassment to any branch of military, because it lived on before you and live on after you. You want to serve with great honor. You want to be able to be honorably discharged. If you're going to be discharged, you do the best you can. Same thing in church. Is the church was created before mankind, before I was a part of the
most
church.
Definitely,
so
before
I don't have
me.
The right to try to bring embarrassment to it. And so my leadership matters when I remember that I am a part of an established organization. But to be a better point man is I need to make sure that I am always in alignment with the one who's doing the pointing.
Reminds me of a scripture: follow me as I,
yes sir,
follow Christ.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And I would just say to anyone out there who is leading, especially to those who are up under somebody's leadership, I'm not challenging you to leave that individual, so don't take me wrong. But you ought to be able, if asked, where you're going. You ought to have a clear understanding of where you're being led. You ought never be confused by where you're being led. I'm a husband and a father. I'm comfortable with the belief that my family can tell you where I'm leading them. And usually a leader will have a vision. Write the vision, make it plain. Mm-hmm. Making it very plain to them the direction we're going in. And so they can buy into it because they know what the blueprint looks like. As a Christian, the Bible is my blueprint. So I can never go astray if I follow the blueprint. And in leadership, it's important for us as leaders to always adhere to the blueprint and make the blueprint available to those who are following us so that they can never get off course. It could become their compass or anything else, but they know the direction we're taking them.
What would you say to that person right now that's aspiring to become a leader or to become a better leader? What are maybe three things you can share?
For the one who wants to become a leader, my first thing is I would start out with a question. Question is simply one word: why? Why? Or better yet, better way of asking is, why do you think anyone wants to follow your leadership? And it's a hard question and a harsh question, but it's an honest question, because sometimes we've convinced ourselves or that one person has convinced us that we are a leader. You have to ask the answer, why? Why would somebody want to follow you? Secondly, it's where are you planning on leading an individual or individuals? Where are you leading them? And these three are solely for that new leader. Where are you leading them? And then number three, and most importantly to me, is can your character handle leadership? Can your character handle leadership? Very important. Because if you are known as somebody who starts stop all the time, you're not ready to lead anybody, because you may just choose one day that I don't want to do anything today. You're a start stopper. For the one who wants to become a better leader, I would strongly encourage you to try to identify an individual that is exemplifying right in the right way leadership that you want to be able to exemplify. Find that individual. Study that individual, whether it's somebody you know personally or somebody that historically. I've always been a lover of and a student of Dr. Martin Luther King. I listen to a lot of his speeches. Never knew him personally, as you know. He deceased before I even been born. But I was exposed to him when I was younger, read a lot of his stuff, going in line and read this to his speeches. And he exemplified great things. Even as a preacher, I try to make sure I'm skilled and versed in oratorical abilities. And so sometimes I'll watch and study Dr. King's handling of a text, handling of an audience, handling of his speech, his eye-to-eye contact, things of that nature. You try to find someone that you can exemplify. But in addition to that, I would tell you to try to find someone that you can tangibly touch that's doing it the right way. And once you find that person, you would do yourself a great service if you would reach out to that person and ask, hey, can I treat you to breakfast or lunch? I want to just ask you a few questions. And you would be amazed the amount of people who will love to share nuggets of wisdom with you, because they want to help you with no charge. The third and final is the mistakes that you've made. What have you learned from them? What have you learned from those mistakes that have now made you better? Because better can't just be better. You have to really know, okay, I bumped my head a few times, and I've learned this as a result of. Because if not, then what it is it's insanity. It's just insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again, trying to get a different result. And that's dangerous as a leader. When you keep doing the same thing over and over again, trying to get a different result. You're insane. You're not a leader.
One of the quotes I like so much is this, and I want to get your take on what it actually means. It says, leaders must be tough enough to fight, yet tender enough to cry. Sure enough to make mistakes, yet humble enough to admit them. Strong enough to absorb the pain, yet resilient enough to bounce back and to keep on moving. And I attribute that one to Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes, sir. I will tell you, when I hear that, first of all, I get chills because it is profound in a major way. And so my interpretation is different from anybody, some other people. But mine is the realization is, as a leader, you're on the front line. You're out front, and you're going to take a lot of the bullets, a lot of the darts, a lot of the arrows thrown your way, and you're going to be exposed. You're going to be ridiculed. You're going to be wounded. And being able to let that be seen, yet you not retaliate the same way as a person who did it to you, being able to sit down and relate to a person who's going through a trial in life, at the same point be able to give them wisdom, at the same point help them go on. And those things are challenging because in today's church context, it's now gotten to the point where our leaders have become untouchable. They're surrounded by, you know, 5, 10, 15 armor bearers, but you can't even get to them. You know, they preach and then they leave. There's no conversation to have with them at all. And we've allowed that to become the norm of today. I'm not against churches having security because there are threats against churches as well. But I am against a pastor who is unwilling to spend some time at least shaking hands with those that they shepherd. And so because that is today's context in some local churches, that quote by Dr. King is far from reality for some people because they don't see it that way. We don't want our parishioners to see us vulnerable. But there's a book out called The Wounded Shepherd. Actually called The Wounded Healer, I should say. And it talks about having to shepherd and lead people as you're wounded. When a person is wounded in active battle, you know, there are individuals, if they can still get out there and still shoot, they want to still get out there because they don't want to keep their brothers and sisters out there in harm. They want to be out there amongst them. You can look at it from the text. Look at it from the text when David was messing around with Bathsheba and got her pregnant, he sent for her husband to come home. He sent for Uriah to come home. And Uriah refused to be intimate with his wife because he said, how can I sleep with my wife? And they're out there still in active battle. He was so committed to his brothers in battle, where he felt it was wrong to be at home intimate with his wife while they're still in active battle. As we all know, those who know the Bible, Uriah ended up getting killed by David's death certificate, but he was committed to the army. And it's the same way in the body of Christ. And my speaker, I'll say this as we draw to a conclusion, yes. I believe. I'll say this. In a church context, the church is the only military or only infantry that actually kills his own people.
Friendly fire.
only ones that do it. And we do it too much and too often.
So we got to learn to love. My goodness, time has gotten away from us again, but I'd love to have you back some other time.
Yes,
Pastor
Absolutely.
McGee, I've just gleaned from your wisdom and insight. Remember, you've been listening to Mr. Speaker Speaks. I'm Vincent Edwards, the one and only Mr. Speaker. Check me out on the internet at VincentTEdwards.com. That's VincentTEdwards.com. Remember, in all that you do, put God first, be magnificent. Most of all, be good, be blessed, but most of all, be a blessing to someone.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of BashaniRadio.com. Make sure to like Bashani Radio on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. All of our social media connections are located on BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything.